This is a production of Cornell University.
The time is now 4:46 p.m. We are going to call the February 6th meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
What's the number?
No,
I'll see here. Apparently, it's healthy here. One, two, oh, Rock doesn't count. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19.
Sorry, yeah.
21? Okay, great. 21. All right,
so next on the agenda is approval of the January 30th meeting minutes. Do I hear any motions or amendments? There's been a motion to approve. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Hearing none, the minutes have been approved. Next portion on the agenda is open microphone speaking data.
Good afternoon, everyone. If you would like to say something to the assembly but you're not currently on the agenda, now is your opportunity to come forward to do so. Seeing none, open microphone is now closed.
Next on the agenda is a core RAVR Cornell announcement, VP of Outreach Batista. Sure. We're going to move on to a communication update that can work spotlight Representative Hudson.
Hi. Today we'd like to announce our digital consultants on our organizational spotlight. I'm looking for the campus event. We have Blake Carr, and that's right, to represent the campus event. The initiative is based on the simple idea that upperclassmen should be invaluable mentors for the students. Last semester, they connected over 260 students in the inaugural round of the initiative. This semester, now we have a website, www.cucampusconnection.com, streamlines the entire connection process. I mean, I personally recommend all of the student assembly join on this website to help transition younger underclassmen to better get to know university and better share our experiences. So I'd like to congratulate Campus Connection and Blake Barr and Zach Price, so they can stand and move on for your awesome work and move forward.
If you two would like to at this time, if you'd like to come forth and say a few words about your organization, you're more than welcome to do that. And a picture for the event. Actually, I'm forcing you now to come up to the front. And after they speak, assembly members, if you have any general questions, I'll allow.
I bring
you
up
to
the staff and focus, and focus, and that's their giving design websites, please reserve the library.
So, we're giving you credit, yeah. Great job, and hopefully you saw your PR on our Facebook page. Right. See how we did that for you? Anybody have any questions there?
May I, just as a reminder, the scientists are basically entering the convention event this Friday, February 7th, so make sure to get on the website and sign up. We'll post more information on our Facebook page tonight.
Sure. Any other questions before I let them sit down? Great. Oh, Rep. Panar. Thank you so much, and just so you know, as you know, congratulations again, but as an org spotlight, the assembly is behind you and supporting you along the way programmatically and whatnot, so I'm sure many representatives will be more than happy to help to participate or help you guys launch whatever you need. So I know Jevin will be probably very integral in that process. So thanks again for coming and congrats again. All right, next on the agenda is actually going to be an architecture, a College of Architecture Art Planning Announcement, Representative Zhao.
Hi everyone, Paul and I have been working together with the city trying to make Cornell to officially recognize drag names so that we can change the base a little bit so that it can get certain publicity. And in order to do that, Paul and I, a few days ago, we met with Dean Hubble to discuss kind of the plans attacking this, and Dean Hubble was referring to a lady named Patrick Clint, who I believe is the director of the Met here at Cornell. Unfortunately, she was stuck in bad weather, I think it was yesterday, so we did not have a chance to meet, but we'll be setting that meeting, and hopefully good things will come from there. So if you guys have any questions, comments, or suggestions, we can let Adam talk about it.
Fantastic. Sounds good. Great college. Next is an Appropriations Committee update, VP Block.
But we had a meeting with the Finance Ministry Organization last Monday, also the first appropriations meeting here. We're starting the process of setting pending feet for the rules and regulations that all Finance Ministry Organizations have to follow. I met with the appropriations committee to kind of talk about the process of setting the feet last semester. We discussed a few things that we'd like to do to improve the process. One of the things that I'm trying to set up some basic financial documents that way groups for a new revitalization will have a framework to do their accounting within. We also talked about things that we'd like to see finance organizations do a better job of, things of tracking attendance, things of evaluating the program, being honest with the committee members in the assembly, and choose how we're approaching the work. So we've been working on a number of issues this semester, mostly things part of this semester with appropriations committee. We don't, certainly don't give it to me, but we'll hopefully get appendix field plugins sometime in late April for the passage, and we're also working on the document for sure.
Okay, I need that back. Thank you. All right, next on the agenda, Community Life Committee update. Russ Defengler is actually not here, so we're going to forego that announcement for now. CD update, Representative Luke.
Hi, so just to update you on the progress of CD from last semester, we have finished the diversity of initiatives for all the bachelor's in the group today.
Yay.
And President Smith and DC Schwartz have been great forces in helping keep us on track, but we definitely couldn't have done it for all the community members. We had our first CD meeting yesterday of the semester, and one of the first things that we did to kind of take a break from the disc was community member Isaiah Francis, or excuse me, community chair, shared his Mohawk culture, and we ended up making bookmarks out of sweet lemongrass and these dyed pieces of wood. And it was a very great experience. And yesterday we also reviewed the resolution that Jesse and I have been working on, and we got great feedback from the committee. So we will be bringing out the resolution about the fire response list to all of you soon. And just moving forward, from the disc that we finished a review last semester, we're also working on an evaluation plan for the rest of the semester.
Sounds good. Thanks so much. Next, the Know the Power of Your Words announcement, Trustee Gibson.
Thank you.
I do what I can.
As some of you guys know, the Know the Power of Your Words campaign was an initiative founded in last year, which I guess tomorrow's
Friday.
We're having a giant Cypress Alliance event, partnered with a lot of men, Corner Lines Matter, and we think the event is Know the Power of Your Words campaign. We have a similar path to last year, and the first 100 people at the week get to see it. It begins at 5.
Thank you so much. Go ahead. No special privileges for everything. Thanks for that. Next is a leadership roundtable announcement. I'll make that. We're having a leadership roundtable after this meeting, apparently. Just found that out, so good times. It's a group convened by Renee Alexander and a few other people, so not sure exactly what we'll be discussing, but we'll be able to report on that next week. Next we are going to, I'm going to read this all to you, and then we're going to do something. So we'd like to recognize first that we had a death recently on campus. Student Sonia Hashmi passed away. So it is with great sadness that I report that we have lost one of our own. Sonia Hashmi, 21, a senior in the College of Arts and Sciences, passed away February 3rd after spending a week in intensive care at Cayuga Medical Center. Her parents were by her side. Sonia majored in biological sciences, worked in the computational physiology laboratory, and planned to attend medical school. She was very active and beloved within the Cornell Muslim community, as well as EARS, Empathy, Assistance, and Referral Service, where she was a highly valued counselor. Those who knew her described her as warm and bright with a radiant smile and a cheerful demeanor. Sonia's fellow EARS counselors welcome students to stop by the EARS room whenever you kind of need, if you need some more support. I believe her funeral prayers are taking place, I believe, today, if not tomorrow. I might be mistaken on that. They're today, right now, in her hometown of New Jersey. New Jersey. Just go for New Jersey. On behalf of the College of Arts and Sciences, the Dean, Gretchen Ritter, extends her deepest condolences to Sonia's family, friends, teachers, and classmates. So at this moment, we're going to observe a moment of silence for Sonia. Thank you. And I would encourage anyone who, if anybody needs some support services or any counseling, please feel free to, grab one of us on the exec board or stop by CAPS or EARS or your closest friend if you need anybody. All right.
We're going to move on before Chief Stoner gets here really quickly. We are going to administer the oath of office. I'm so sorry. VP Batista.
Thank you,
Lissy.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple announcements about community in general. One thing, residential programs in response to university's call for addressing needs, issues, and services related to sexual violence and bias prevention. They created the Core RA program, which was launched last semester. Just to keep that all in your minds and aware that residential programs have really been working on towards this, and it's gotten really positive responses from North Campus Housing. As well, keep an eye out for the We Are Cornell campaign, which is sponsored by Slope Media and URW, Cornell United Religious Work. They've been posting on Facebook and Twitter, and it really is just kind of bringing Cornell to a deeper, like, value sense of meaning and how Cornell has changed their heart. Really interesting videos that have been posted, so make sure to keep an eye out for that as well. Thanks.
Great. Sorry about that.
Fantastic.
All right. And then you actually are going to do the campus life committee update.
Yeah, I just want to give an update representative to Vancouver Chapter. So this week we worked on the follow-up and printing initiative, and I'll be meeting with CID tomorrow. We also talked about the food insecurity initiatives, the local fishes, and a current test run of bringing extra food from Keegan to a homeless shelter in Ithaca, I believe. And also we talked about the plastic bag extension.
Great. Sounds good. Thanks. All right. Now for real this time, we're going to administer the oath of office. Neglected to do that for Representative Chen, but we also are welcoming new Representative Francesco Jimenez, who is replacing Representative Adrian Murphy in the hold as the representative of hospital. So at this time, Inga, did you get an oath of office piece in your binder sheet? If not, one of the kind representatives next to you should have one because they are responsible and they kept it. Yeah. Oh, there she got it. But if both of you could please rise at this time, as in stand up, and repeat after me. As of well. In view of the trust the Cornell community has vested in me, as well as my personal sense of honor,
I, Francesca Jimenez,
do solemnly affirm to fulfill my responsibilities as a student elected representative. I will engage in open and honest debate in a process where I am guided by truth and fairness. I will never purposely misrepresent facts in an effort to achieve my goals. If a conflict of interest arises, I will relinquish my right to participate in the decision-making process. I will seek out and voice effectively the interests and concerns of the student body, address the issues of my fellow students, and strive to improve the quality of life at Cornell for all students. So we'll actually give you your own individual sheet because we kind of forgot, and then you will have to sign that for this. Congratulations, now you're both officially and you're from the list. All right, so Chief Zoner should be here momentarily. I don't want to awkwardly have to stop somebody, but with... Sure, go ahead.
So guys, a lot of you guys in the last week have really come to time to rally behind our presentation and enhance Cornell's awareness here. I just want to let you guys know, all the co-sponsors on this, that this resolution is going to end up going ahead and being sent back dying right now with the momentum that we have behind it. I really think that now in dying,
so on that note, we're going to make this formal to make sure that we're serving the process. And hearing business of the day resolution number 45, enhancing Cornell health awareness, I will entertain right now a motion to refer this to the dining committee.
Second.
There's been a motion to refer this to the dining committee. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Hearing none, by unanimous consent, we're going to refer that back to the dining committee, and it will be brought up when that committee is ready.
Thank you.
She said she was coming at 5. That's all I know. Her assistant told me she'd be here.
I can start my thing now.
You can, yeah, go ahead. Sorry. You're going there?
Yeah.
I just didn't know where you were going. Okay, so we're going to actually hear from VP of Finance Block. He's going to talk about the upcoming endowment, or FA endowment discussion that we're going to start having very soon.
Man, oh man, so we're going to live today. Fantastic. The first thing I'm going to do is go over a special project request that I received from Athlete Ally. It was heard in front of the Appropriations Committee on Monday. Athlete Ally was a organization that we considered, I believe, as the first word spotlight, I think it's called. They are an organization that is focused on highlighting difficulties that members of the LGBTQ community had, especially those who are athletes, and working to get a better support group for them. Advocacy for Pete Crosswell, who is the president of Athlete Ally for the Appropriations Committee. They are trying to fund for the region, I believe, Brendan Island Medeo, who will be coming to speak at Cornell. The Appropriations Committee granted a $750 special project request, and with that money, they will have a full $8,000 full amount they need from the speaking issue. So basically, the point behind this was a organization that's new, that is trying to actually resubstitute the program on Cornell campus. Very popular. We felt that it reflected the mission of the student assembly, something that family members have been working on, meets our guidelines for special projects coming. And we did think that this would be an actually effective program. I think a lot of people will come to see an NFL player.
No, I got it.
You know, once you take that you have to vote on that because of the amount.
Any questions? Motion? Question? Go for it. Rep that, Rep Talbot.
Just a question about the procedure. So when we vote on it, yeah, yay or nay, perhaps then we just push it.
So that's a point of information.
Point of information. Thank you.
Once it's approved by the student assembly, all direct outcomes. So that will be the internal transfer account, so transfer $750 from our special project account to their operating account.
Or you just want voting procedure? Oh, okay. Second.
We are voting on whether or not to agree with the appropriations committee to grant this organization $750.
Great. Sounds good. So, another question? Go for it.
Because the event was $8,000, it was for NFL players.
They are hoping to bring in current NFL player replacers, ultimately, from Brendan Isaiah. Who's someone who spoke up a lot about LGBTQ issues, especially in the sports community, and someone who's been very popular. This is kind of their first, that the ally is the first big event that they're trying to hold.
Okay. Any motions at this time? There's been a motion to approve. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to go into a placard vote. All those in favor of upholding the Appropriations Committee decision for Athlete Ally, please raise your placard. All those opposed? Oh, no. Okay. All those who abstain? By a vote of 19-0-1, the resolution passes. And Athlete Ally is funded at $750. All right. Chief of Cornell University Police Department has entered the building. Please welcome Kathy Zoner to the front. Oh,
I know where we got things done. That's great. We always look forward to hearing you. We actually have quite a few representatives who are working on some initiatives dedicated specifically to safety, so I did send you a couple of bullet points that were geared specifically toward there, so I'm sure a lot of people have questions regardless after that, so feel free to talk on those points or any other initiatives that you guys are taking on.
Great, thanks.
All right,
I'm going to use that as a launching platform, and then Jamie will plug our chip watch on the security report, which I brought hard copies with me to share in different kinds of objects. So take them to distribute elsewhere. It's also available online at our website, in addition, they accumulate all the security notices that our officers and our crime the Cornell Police on Newark, our blue light escorts, submit for open doors, open windows, broken windows, lighting issues, many of them, there are multitude of things that they're charged with looking out for the general security of the campus. And they've done about 178 of those security violations. We reached back to try to get care of them, make sure that those items are taken care of. They do flyers and assist out on the cards that we have to put out. So if there's an addition to email that we have other outreach efforts, they will respond with either programming or outreach efforts. They provided over 630 laptop security from software connections to people. They've installed 53 child safety seats. We have a very active child safety seat installation program. That's, the installation program is free to any Cornell affiliate. And in certain cases, people can apply for and receive a free child safety seat if they are unable to afford to get one. Then they've done, today, here today, they've done over 92 presentations or meetings with faculty, staff, and students on various issues. We've done two lighting surveys this year so far, and five security surveys. In those cases, we'll be contacted by people to say, hey, we have a concern for whatever reason, or we would just like to have you come over and look over our offices, or our rooms or our situations and see if there's a way we can improve our own internal security. Or a crime might have happened and the people have an interest in following up with having their area of control reviewed for security enhancements, which vary everything from, hey, why don't you lock the door, to technology solutions. And they can participate in those, and they've done five of those this year. And then their response, that office is also responsible for kind of helping manage all the many alarm systems that we have on campus. And to date, some of those are non-criminal alarms, so environmental alarms, but the heat changes, heat leaks, and those types of things, those will come into our office because we're 24/7. But they're in charge of the criminal aspect of it. And to date, we have been asked to respond to over 158 criminal alarms, 109 of those were accidental. And those accidental ones, when we term something accidental, that means a person had a hand in an accidental alarm. They forgot their access code, they forgot to add an alarm, and they walked in, or someone was given a hard key that bypassed the security system without first giving that person the right authorization to enter a secure area. Then there were about 50 unexplained alarms as well. Sometimes there's a short fault in the system that sometimes can activate an alarm. So you can see we do a lot of responding to alarms that usually end up being not much of anything, but we go anyway because there might be something there. And in addition, they help our access control program when they do their security surveys for that technology installation. They look at emergency and blue light phone placements and locations, make suggestions, take suggestions, and try to place those, and work with the alarm installation crew to identify best places and best practices. So it's very, very busy unit, and I'm very proud of them. Just the two people, we can definitely get some help with our regular personnel on the programming aspects. So if you guys haven't met them, at least you got an idea base. And if you haven't had a program presented by at least a person in uniform, then I would be able to perform some sort of audit with them. Are there any questions about our preparation officers before I move to other things?
Any questions about crime prevention? Is that what you want? Is it okay? You want to talk about the data?
Sure. I'll try. I'm going to have to first later. I'll
I just wanted to thank you for coming out today. And I guess in looking to the table here, the one thing that's really common is on campus facilities and residential facilities. is a quite large number of burglaries.
Oh, yeah.
Could you speak a little bit more to that?
So there are several different levels of burglary in the penal law. So once someone enters someone's dwelling and steals something, if that person can have, if it's unclear or if it's undetermined, or you can show that the person didn't have authorization to enter that area, then that's a burglary. One of the things that we're set out to do is many institutions were sort of largely a lesser crime. That's a crime that implies less invasion of a person's space. And some universities were padding their statistics by calling what should have been burglaries by penal law a larceny. So we don't do that. The majority of those burglaries are access to people's rooms that they don't lock. So a lock is meant to defer a burglar, but it doesn't change the level of crime when the person enters that room. So it may be that it's not, you know, the key man breaking the window, crying, you know, trying to fix the TV. It's still an entry into someone's private control space to steal an item. And generally speaking, because we have so many residents on campus, that would only be charged with burglary.
Thank you.
And we will see that fluctuate depending on how security minded, I guess I should say, the people in those rooms.
Yeah, thank you for coming. I just had a quick question. On the page 8 and 9, what's the difference between the data? I think I'm not fully understanding. Sorry. Because they're the same topics, I just didn't understand what the difference in the two charts are.
Okay, on page 8, those crimes are reported to the Cornell University Police. By law, if the information comes known to us, or if the outside agency supplies that information to us, which they're not required to run by law, then page 9 deals with crimes that were reported within an area that was not within Cornell Police jurisdiction, but was close to campus.
Okay.
So it's other law enforcement agencies on page 9 and Cornell University on page 8.
Okay.
Next is VP Tulsa.
All right, thank you so much for being here. I live in an off-campus fraternity, and from like what I hear recently, we've got a few emails that just sort of a raft of small, kind of like burglaries or robberies from a number of fraternities. A lot of it is sort of like composite pictures and different values, that sort of thing. And it seems like it's sort of like a no man's land, almost sort of like a rogue thing where the attorney is doing this and it's almost not beyond police control, but it's sort of in the system is there. And I know for an off-campus attorney it's a little different, but for the on-campus one, is there some sort of strategy to sort of decrease this or ensure that valuables are returned? Or what is sort of the strategy to combat this?
Well, the Office for Attorney Sorority and the Living Centers really does a great job at trying to manage getting ahead of this and saying, okay, when you're looking for new membership or you're trying to increase camaraderie amongst your crew, here are some things that are absolutely unacceptable. It's still up to the person and the group to make a choice to not direct people to do sorts of things or to not encourage independent thinking to do illegal activities. Gain points, for lack of a better word, in the system that has in past years encouraged that type of thing. It's an old culture. It's very good to change culture, as we well know. But our mantra is it's still a larceny, it's still a burglary. It doesn't matter whether it was done in good fun or not. Someone hasn't reported it to us, so if they reported it to us, that means they were offended by the action, therefore, it's no longer in good fun. So we ask people to steer away from all of that illegal activity when you're challenging people to show their dedication to one of the other.
Thank you.
I do know
equally challenging, but not as difficult.
Representative Vendor.
Hi, thanks for coming. I just had a quick question regarding the life survey. I was just wondering if there are any specific areas of specific attention or any projects you're working on yet?
I don't have that list with me, but I'm happy to follow up with an email if you'd like to. We run into a lot of difficulty providing the survey in that sometimes we have to prioritize the facilities, either campus-wide facilities or on-campus facilities have to manage these types of changes. And they have to prioritize them based on the funding they have. So number one, it's not sometimes that the project isn't being addressed, it's that it's further down the queue than maybe somebody would want. The other is that we're trying to balance between light pollution and safety. I don't think anybody wants to sleep under the blaze of 8 million lumens. We really want to have some sort of set lighting level, which may be appealing to some, offensive to others, and completely unnoticed by the vast majority. Generally, we see when a crime of significance, a violent crime, or a crime of mental disability people happen, then there's an increase in introspection about what areas are lit or not lit. It's not reasonable or expected to light every corner of the campus. And sometimes people just have to make choices to route themselves to areas that are appropriately lit and not make shortcuts that take them time, but like exposing to other
Representative?
Yeah, could you talk briefly about Cornell Police jurisdiction and the role of CDP on off-campus problems?
Sure. We have, in particular, about the only place we have a relationship is in off-campus fraternities that are affiliated with Cornell University. And our role in that place is confusing enough that we tend to take a second layer approach to that. So the responding agency is responsible for the area of jurisdiction of that fraternity or sorority is the primary responsible agency for criminal activity. So if the police, the high police, town of Ithaca, sheriff's office, state police, those are the primary responsible agencies. But there may be an additional foreign interest that comes to us through our role as university officials outside of our role as criminal police. In those particular cases, we assist the Office of Training and Sorority and Independent Living so that we can help reach a solution to any problems that might come our way. We also are very much aware that there's some issues amongst the community about feelings of having Ithaca Police be the responding agent versus Cornell Police being the responding agent. And we do our best to help navigate that and explain. But our authority as police and in police actions and arrests and whatnot is our internal property. Cornell owned, operated, controlled, and maintained. And independent, non-Cornell Greek houses do not fall under that particular definition. That would be the.
Okay. Next is Representative Ali. Representative Warshaw.
Hi, I just have a follow up questions about signing up for university notification systems, such as to alert NOFA officers, staff, other complaints. So I was wondering, for example, you try to talk to centers that enter your phone number to receive emergency mass notifications. I was wondering how many students are currently signed up for that. Is it, in your opinion, a more effective system than email to allow students to be more informed and safe on campus?
And part of that is just my opinion. And the other part of that would be statistically, I don't know exactly how many students are enrolled. I know it's not enough. We have I have those numbers, but I don't have them with me. I'm happy to follow up with the email. Yeah, it does fluctuate. We encourage everybody to sign up. Is it a more efficient than email? And I guess I would go around the room and say, you check more often, you text or your email. Most people check their text more often. Most people have an alert system.
on their phone designed to tell them that they're paying taxes. So in that respect, I would say yes, a text is more efficient for an urgent notification, emergency mass notification. But that said, if you're not the kind of person who gets a text or wants to get text, then you're not. So you really still have to kind of weigh that out for yourself. Ultimately, multiple ways to be notified is best, of course, and then your phone and or other means. That's a good question. Buzzing means a lot more if we have an urgent issue.
Follow up question. So do you think there's a way that we can maybe have more students aware of their mass text notification system versus just an email? Do you think that would be another way to get more students like actually feel like what's going on? For example, I have friends who didn't go to the class at camp or just signed up and went to class and realized all the good.
That does happen. Does people miss communications no matter how we throughout our outreach? I actually have on my docket to meet with, I can't remember which day, but coming up very soon to meet with a couple of students that are very interested in helping further that message. So the answer is yes, there's probably multiple ways we can encourage that, and I'm willing, very willing to assist in making that happen.
We've got that timing too. I had an awkward experience. I don't know if everybody remembers a couple months or last semester sometime when they were testing the siren. Or the whole alert system, but you got the text message like way after the siren stopped. It was a little awkward. You're like, wait a minute.
Could well, and that's the other thing. There are, the sirens are amazing. There are only four sirens on campus, so there's no flaw to getting anything out. The systems that we work with, and that we choose to work with, are all dependent on the phone systems forwarding our requests. So at a certain point, it becomes the responsibility of the providing network provider to further that message to their system, their control, their humans. What we send goes instantaneously. What it butts up against in its thing is what the service worker goes further out. And that's why there's a multi-layered approach. The idea isn't for us to only be able to rely on one piece of communication. To the point, you can get a text message very quickly, and the person standing next to you might get one much later. But if you're standing next to that person, you can share that information and say, oh, look, I've got this information and I probably need to respond to it. And that's part of it as well. Not to get in the nature that every individual gets the message, but that we broadcast it and that information is available and is shared in the quickest way possible.
Makes sense. Next is Rep. Back.
Thank you for coming today. Answering some of our questions. I'm sitting on a committee right now called the Campus Infrastructure Committee, and we're working with an issue actually right now with the T-Tech system, and specifically about programs where we provide free ridership to students. And I was wondering if your time, if you could speak a little bit more about the UI specific. That you have for campus, and I see them here, and what I'm really interested in is the change, if you can recall, I don't know if this is probably a big change as a result of providing nights and weekend services for your students, in terms of the number of DUI arrests that you have on our campus.
I definitely don't have that information running in, it's something I can take. We now have a criminalist position, and I can see if that person can look at those numbers. It's been a couple of years back since that happened. DUIs are usually not tied to what we do. Certainly arrest some students with DUI, the WI we call locally. Actually, the numbers are very few. And we have a far greater number of DWIs that are non-affiliated to the campus than people who are affiliated with the campus. So that's an interesting anecdotal perspective I can share. I can't split it out. But for instance, 2 days this year, since the fall semester, we've had 27 DWI arrests. A very small percentage of them have been students, very small percentage of them have been employees or staff, mostly local people.
So typically, it's locally driving
through the campus. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
that's true. Doesn't mean that when it's skewed at some point or another, but the reality is having a car on campus, especially
these statistics, including the DWI arrests that you receive from I guess, outside people? Or
the only part of this, so those statistics on the page 8 would be our statistics, and on page 9 would be outside law enforcement.
Okay, so these are just Cornell affiliates, Cornell students, Cornell.
Oh, no. That has to do with the Cornell police making the arrest, not okay. The affiliation of the person who was arrested.
So, for example, the 33 individuals that were arrested in 2012, you would say that only a small portion of those were Cornell students who were affiliated with the individual.
Right.
Okay.
I don't have the exact numbers, but I can know that tends to be the breakdown.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Next is Trustee Gitlin.
I have a comment and then a question. The comment is, last year I brought the West Coast of Murphy, but on slow day last year, so much rest from the accident that they had experienced a crush against the signal. West Coast of Murphy was actually walking up the slow day in public, and she said that she had seen the crush, which was in the crash. I was wondering if there are any disciplinary measures that there are any plans to do in the
Yes, we're always cognizant of the issues that come up around any large types of gathering of people. We're having some concerts that happen in a lot of different areas. Ultimately, behavior is the responsibility of the individuals who gather there and understanding the potential for that exists. And quite honestly, it's very difficult to undo when it starts. I do know that some actions were taken, stage placement, placement of individual personnel to try to ease that pressure off in a lot of different areas. But we're talking about 15,000 people and 21 law enforcement agencies and 50 security guards. It's very difficult to manage. Ultimately, it's called responsibility. We've had some great responses from the performers, actually, who said, I'm not just saying it, you're getting back up because this is. But that's not what the case I am. So ultimately, appeal upfront to the individuals intending to be aware of the situations that helping to create by pushing
it. And the domestic comments are. The other question I have is there's a lot of publicity around the jaywalk campaign that the Ministry of Justice is wondering, have those been affected?
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I know there were other questions, and I'm happy to respond to this, but I can speak to the activists.
Sure.
There are
two more people in the group wanted to answer those.
Yeah.
VP Block. I'll pass.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for coming. I have a somewhat troubling experience with QED during rush week. I just wanted to talk about it briefly. I was buying some beer at 7-Eleven, and there was a police officer, a former police officer, in 7-Eleven. And I guess that during rush week, you're going to be somewhat sensitive to people purchasing alcohol. Since in the store, the police officer comes up and starts asking me if I can return me, what's wrong with me. I thought it was a little weird to be in a private establishment. But after looking at your car and driving through College and Drive, down College through Green Light, we were pulled over for supposedly running a red light. And even though we were well aware of it, on through Green Light, and it kind of seemed like they were just trying to figure out who we were. And we weren't ticketed, but I assumed it was something that we'd like to see on, and actually went through a red light.
Actually, of the stops that we do, only one third actually end up at
okay.
We do a lot more than we
do. That's fair enough. But I guess I was somewhat troubled by what I was supposed to do when a police officer pulled me over for what it seemed like was just trying to figure out who I was. You know, when they ask for license and registration, and you know, you really seem like it was very novel to solve. What are we supposed to do about that?
Well, if you have any complaints about any of my options for anything whatsoever, that would, I would classify that as a complaint. It's a strong word, but it's one that we're used to, and that's the way we make things in, and the way we work through those. Bring it to our attention. We have a system whereby we look into the situation to try to understand what has gone wrong. If my officer has accountability, I will hold them accountable. It's not just to drop your complaint off and work with you. Our goal is to kind of restore confidence in us, as well as address any problems that may arise. So if I've got somebody doing that, that's what I would like to know.
also have a similar experience with actually coming to our street.
Yes.
So I think it was something. And I know multiple people that have similar experiences. So.
Yes, and again, if you have that question or concern, then something that you comes to us, you can report it in through any venue, just call, ask for the officer in charge at the time, right after the event, or after, or days after the event, or the agent, call, ask to speak to the officer in charge, maybe you have a question or complaint about an officer's behavior you want to look into, and they'll start working with you and bringing that to the process. Absolutely. They have a lot of conversations about questions and concerns for what doesn't feel right to you.
Thank you, Beth Halbert.
Thank you for being here. So, I had another experience where I was studying powers in the library and go outside right across the stage hall away from the CCAT. And it's usually a comes at 7:30 but at 7:45 I wasn't there, 51 minutes, 7:55 I wasn't there. It was 8:00 when it was finally there, so 5 degrees outside, studying for hours. And this isn't the one time that it happened, it was several times that it occurred, and this is the mention of school floor. So I was wondering what your relationship is with TCAT, your timing and quality service.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't have a relationship with TCAT in particular. It's not a Cornell, while Cornell helps and subsidizes their operating costs, it's not a Cornell only service. So if you have conflicted schedules and whatnot, your best bet is to reach out to their complaint system. And I do know that they do welcome feedback. Sometimes muscles break down, sometimes there are issues, but especially if it happens multiple times or if you notice a pattern, those are times when they can really address issues. But again, if you're doing an explanation, you're supposed to be there at a certain time, and then you show up, then you're doing it.
Right. If you wanted to, I think.
Sure. So everybody's favorite topic, vehicle and traffic laws, right? Let me just kind of run down the statistics first, and then I'll talk a little bit. So we distributed over 1,000 pedestrians and 300 to 400 bike and educational flyers during current attention details and other street details. We do our advanced notifications and educational hearing rules right on our campus. This is what we do. There was a press release to indicate that we had upcoming traffic violation details set up especially to take care of speeding, texting, and distracted driving violations. We've regularly posted information about vehicle traffic safety as well as upcoming enforcement details on our Facebook page. We have already, you know, I know it's a very different like our page. Nobody wants to say that they like us, please. But if you go to our page occasionally, you can see a lot of information and ask questions through that menu, through private message, and see upcoming events and issues that are on the forefront of our docket. We had we issued over 157 traffic tickets in September as a result of those enforcement details that I spoke about. As I mentioned, we had a child safety checkpoint, which is different from organizing a place for we'll stop. We set up an area for people to come and drive through. They just drive through the ticket and they have an area shelter to check the tickets and make sure it's secure. They drive it voluntarily. And check those out and have those as well. We do alcohol awareness and information sessions to get through the correct prevention program as well as on the radio shift patrols or in the apps. We do regular, we're regular sessions in the wine and the dining district. The yields that people call you if you drink and drive and other patients there. We also try to message around other vehicle traffic violations that we see frequently on campus during that time frame. Including self pedestrian parking. We try to get our message in global bodies and the CWI. The examining project call project. We're not a project, we're not in control of the project.
Education Services is under control of the project. We know that there have been problems with it. We've been out there. We set up over 32 special vehicles. They made that traffic pattern change to try to stop people from driving the wrong way. On that one driving through at all, they're not a bus transport emergency vehicle, they're not supposed to be in there. And we've done a very high number of education and enforcement in that area. That traffic pattern is going to take a little while to catch on, and it's too advised for too many people to try to circumvent, especially the hours after the normal operation is broken down. It's problematic. We know it's problematic, we're doing what we can, but we have to look at the medical personnel and obviously a lot of different places that I need to pay attention to as well. We gave the numbers on that. Over 700 warnings. We've only rolled 60 tickets out of 700 warnings. So our goal here is just to ticket people. And maybe you like it if you're receiving a ticket. But if you're not receiving a ticket, that raises another question. Enforcement is a level of education. We view that as our primary goal. And if we can stop you once having not repeated the violation, then that's wonderful. That's what we would like to do. We track our warnings, we track our behavior too, so we know if we've stopped you before for other behaviors. And we know if it's the first time you've been stopped. And we address that at an escalated level of enforcement, which would generally be an effective. We did get a vehicle off, a person that was trying to drive through that area, gave some warnings on people that didn't quite reach the alcohol threshold, were not safely driving, but still had alcohol in the system before driving through. To give you an idea, we had issues. My math was a little off. Our warnings were a little over 1,800, and our tickets written were 14. So it's closer to 50-50. Sorry, I mentioned that before, but it's closer to 50-50. The vast majority are running a stop sign and running a stop light. The second next to that is cell phone detection. Very dangerous, especially for the campus. It's just too many other distractions that I can have one thing away from this information, and that would be please do not talk on your cell phone or text on your cell phone while you're driving any speakers. Hands-free are your lives. It's very, very difficult. Hands-free is legal, but it's still distracting. You have to be very, very careful to set up a potential for accident and injury. We have it pedestrians and bicycles. I know that some of you who have experienced this driver. Modes of transportation, and we do text for that, ticket for that, and we do seatbelt violations as well outside of that. So that's generically the effort that we have on our traffic safety. Traffic safety, what are the numbers of statistics? But can kind of be followed up to the answer that I had with the DWI, is oftentimes the people that are on campus to take advantage of our known population and perhaps their ignorance of or subscription to illegal activity, that's a great way for us to track local people that are coming up on our campus to sell drugs and break in houses. It is a very strong connection between the number of vehicle and traffic stops that an enforcement agency does and their solving of crimes and burglaries, drug related crimes that are on campus. So it has, in addition to being an education enforcement tool for the driver, it increases the safety level on a number of different fronts.
In the interest of time, because I know you have a schedule and stuff, you might have things to do. I have one final question. It might be a little heavy, but the rest of the stuff that we mentioned earlier, I know we'll follow up on via email, and I'll send you something afterwards just to get that also, and I'll disseminate that information to you all. But particularly, we have a few reps that are working on stuff related to the Clery Act that you talked about earlier, and in looking at the statistics and the data, and I think it would be really helpful if you could at least kind of describe kind of the role that you guys might play when it comes to reporting sexual assault or sexual harassment, in particular venues, whether it's basically on campus for the most part, and then what information you're actually allowed to disclose. And with the new changes that went through with policy 6.4 that Melissa worked on, if there was any change in that process and what you guys are allowed to do or disclose.
So 6.4 is an administrative action, right? So we might get consulted for information that might help that action move forward, but it's not a criminal action or a legal action. So we wouldn't necessarily be hired in to do any investigation. The person that's running the investigation, according to 6.4, is the person that's running the investigation. So if they ask for our information, we share what we can. As far as what we can share publicly, the Query Act only requires that we report statistics, and we report cases that come to us. It will not allow us to clarify or redact any unfounded reports, or so that these are strictly somebody called me and we knew, even anonymously, we had no information to follow up on. And said, hey, I'm not telling you my name, I'm not telling you what happened exactly, but I was raped and it's on campus. I've got to report that as a statistic. So I will caution in there that there are oftentimes we're limited in the amount of information we get in or ability to bring in to close to our sexual assault. That said, we are very proactive. There's a strong track record of following up with them and doing very thorough investigations on sexual assault. We want them reported to us, and we want people to feel comfortable reporting to us. So anything we need to do further that, we will. Our role in as a law enforcement agency is not to release really any information until charges are filed or public information becomes available. Internally, if something is 436.4 on sexual assault or through the GOP administrator's office or other matters, those are, again, administrative actions, not public knowledge law enforcement actions. So our daily crime log will release all the information that we're allowed to and should release on crimes. In the case of where there's both the administrative action as well as criminal action, then the name of the charged individual will be released as public information.
Well, thank you so much for that, and thank you for actually volunteering to do that. Well,
sure. And again, following up with the emails, KRG1, I will do my best to get back as soon as possible. If I fail to respond, it's not because I'm ignoring you, I just lost you in my inbox.
You're very busy, so thanks so much. And where else can these booklets be found, by the way?
Online.
Oh, okay.
I have hard copies in my offices. If you need hard copies, you can also look at them online.
Okay.
Right at our homepage, Test Center, and the annual security report. You click on it, and we'll give you a link to get to that in the video.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much. All right. I'm sorry, what happened?
There's extra.
Oh, there's extra.
No, I bought one.
Those who want them are people in the audience. All right, we're going to move to new business, hearing Resolution 44, Improving Sustainability on North Campus. The freshman rep, all of you guys, please. It's all who's on here. Oh, I lied. There's a lot of you on here. Thompson, Warshaw, Zal, Benjari, Maletti, and Jackson is not a rep. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing. I was wondering, I was like, that doesn't make sense. Got it. All right, so no, it's Leslie, Sal, Maletti, Vendari, Jackson, Ramirez, sponsor. Jordan, if you want to, sorry, at the back. Nick, passing the mic.
Improving sustainability on North Campus is a recommendation and will require employee loyalty as my members' presence of cash. Because this is a recommendation, the community is entitled to 2 collective votes. Those community votes will be allocated to whichever side has a collective majority. Also, because this is new business, make sure when we have discussion.
Fantastic. You all, I will give you 3 minutes to present.
Okay, yeah. So basically with this resolution, the freshman reps have all come together. And we're going ahead and based on the literature around all the screening on campus, that was one thing that we noticed. One thing that we did while we were doing the research on this was that in the past, I honestly forget what class it was. It was a junior class. Went ahead and really paved the way for putting the trash can there, and really did most of that heavy work that we all had to end up doing as well. This resolution was specifically for Long Street. There was a need there, and that was really where you want to go ahead and put your stuff.
Just a personal anecdote. Well, I was waiting for a bus at Long Street the other day, and literally I was going to go to trash there. The garbage cans that are available there are from like the farm, and then they go to the center, which is where people mostly walk through. So we felt that there was a need for the resolution, and it's just going to be
easier. And just with a question that I'd like to come up with, do we need a resolution for this? I would just say that by having a resolution, we can check to do that, because it would be something installed. And if this is changes, we want to see definitely.
Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, well, stop at a minute and 30. Good stuff. Our first on the speaker's list is Rep. Ali Khan.
So, thank you for that, you guys are working together. So I hear some of the recommendation, but I don't think anything about who is this getting recommended to.
Well, even in the past, we were looking at another resolution. They did not have it be there for resolve that a copy of this resolution is sent to the university center. There is really no need to. We're going to take this and really go to the facilities department. That is the department that would be responsible for this. And a matter of fact, in talking with them, the guy's like his email quote, oh, great idea. I was like, oh, all right. Here's a note, right? So anyway, that answers your question.
And next is DB Tulsi.
Before I start speaking, I have a motion to move this to business today.
Second. There's been a motion to move to business today. Second, is there any dissent? Seeing none, business of the day. Great.
Okay. First of all, I think it's a really good idea. My freshman year, I used to always eat breakfast over at Bell, and I'd also grab a banana at the end because the world was my new bee. And I would always eat the banana on my steps down, and then once I'm up on the cell, there's no garbage can. So I'd actually have to hold it all the way down to the end of the footbridge before I went to couch labs to throw it away. And funny story, that garbage can is completely full of banana clips, so I don't see exactly. So this is important. So I fully support it. However, I would change the title so that I can do sustainability, just putting in a garbage can. But otherwise, it's a great
actually, yeah, my personal anecdote was sort of an idea before, but yeah, that's definitely one of the things that we noticed. And in terms of the sustainability element of it, I think I was thinking to some of the people in the recycling department to potentially get a recycling bin in addition to the trash can. So I think that was one of the assumptions behind that, but some people are interested in that.
Chucky Gitlin.
So, one of my proudest achievements on this day is finally getting, actually, I got to look at a map of all of them. Where I thought it would be better to use the garbage can. Couldn't have done this without my money to use the garbage can, but I thought I'd take it in that category. What I think that I will talk about more is the thing that you guys are going to do that I don't think I've ever mentioned in that discussion, or they wasn't in that somehow. The university has been very concerned about the garbage can and from what I've learned yesterday, they were using a lot of shelter and sort of bus stops across the hotel in England. So we invested that in probably the asset charge can be placed there. And the two people that I would suggest that the two people, if you reach out to two specific people that we work with, one is Peter Salina, and it's an IT, so you know now. It's PMS 10. And then
appropriate time. Rick Hudson.
Hey guys, thank you for coming forward. I think it's a good idea. What I'd also recommend is kind of analyzing the rest of the tank as well. I mean, I think having one trash can doesn't necessarily change the culture of throwing things on the ground. Like, I think it's great to look a bit more than having one, but I think we should probably end up doing it more sustainable and inclusive. Because I think there's probably more than one place to like them. I mean, trash can, there's like a bit, even a place that's like compost. I would recommend that you do a more systemic look as well, because I think adding one ground would really solve the issue and make it more sustainable. But I mean, I just think I would recommend that you look at the campus and other areas that might be improvements because other people will
I'd just like to say that I'm on Sustainability Hub. I'm actually on the Community Recycling Composting Initiative, so that's kind of outside of this, but that is coming.
I would encourage anyone doing that to make sure they're working with Rep Warshaw, who's also taking on big initiatives similar to that. So please make sure you're collaborating. Next is Rep Chen. Former Environmental Committee Chair, UBC Valley.
Also something to keep in mind when it comes to composting that makes it especially hard, this is something that we tried to do when I was Environmental Committee Chair, is that for everything that needs to be picked up, there needs to be facilities people to come get it and change the trash bags and whatever, and that tends to be a challenge job, and facilities currently does not have a budget for that. Maybe that's changed. So, I hope to see that in the future.
VP Block.
So, are the problems associated with compost the main problems associated with having recycling bin? Seems like pretty much ever on campus with this trash can and also recycling bin. So, not really sure if I'm going to want to
put
a recycling bin. Something about it on campus. I yield to them about it.
Yes, the concerns are similar. However, recycling has been like a movement for a longer time, so more people understand how it works. Also, the same with compost, but against smelly. So there are additional concerns when you're doing compost around.
Then I would recommend that one person objection to the other recommendation,
even regarding
and recycling.
Yeah, and recycling
did. Is that a formal motion?
Yeah,
there's been a motion to amend the resolution, and the amendment is on line what? And the language is what?
The language is provided by the line 25. 24. The addition of a garbage container, ampersand, recycling bin.
Actually, 24, 25.
3X, composting that well over there.
This camper can recycling bin.
Great. All right. So it's been a motion to amend. It's been seconded. We're gonna go into discussion on that amendment. Guys, come on now. We're gonna go into discussion on the amendment right now. Sponsor, did you want to speak on it first, and then get one out of the issue? Do you understand the amendment or no?
It's actually two locations, so that one specific on 18 and March 25, which is going to be 26, but yeah, we'd be in favor of this.
Yes. I call it back on the amendment.
There's been a cause of question on the amendment. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent?
Dissent. I'd like to hear what Trustee Ditlin has to say.
There's been dissent, so we're either going to vote unless you choose to.
I withdraw my motion.
There's been you withdraw the amendment. Next on the speaker is Trustee Ditlin.
I just want to point out that the other vote is kind of meaningless because where are the garbage cans and the first item in the rule that they have. So. But I do agree with one. I am confused.
All right.
I then called a question on the amendment.
It's been a call for question on the amendment. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to vote on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your flag. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. All those opposed? All those who abstain. Must the clock not be able to vote? Somebody already did. It's 5:20 to promote the amendment passes. Back into general discussion on the resolution. Next is Rep. Warshaw. Previous question.
It's the perfect moment in procedure calling questions.
Oh, gotcha. I just didn't get what you're saying. Anyway, well, meanwhile, it's been a call question. Great. Since I can do any dissent, seeing none, we're going to vote now. All those in favor? Actually, should I interject? No, I won't. I'm going to roll call over whatever I want to do. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Put those placards down. I did not see anything. Since it's a recommendation, the community is entitled to a vote. So the community members that are, the two votes. So the community members that are in the audience right now, you are entitled to two votes collectively. Two votes that will be allocated to the majority side as George has indicated. So, if you vote yes, you are in favor of the resolution. If you vote no, I'm sorry? If you vote no, you are not in favor of the resolution. So, are you guys prepared to vote? You don't have to exercise the right to vote, by the way. Great. So, all those in favor of Resolution 44, basically putting a trash can in the recycle bin on North, please raise your hand. 2. All those, all those opposed, all those who abstain, would be a 1. You technically abstain. So, by a vote of 2-0 to 1, the two votes, two community votes will be allocated to the overall total in favor of the resolution. Now, for real this time, all those SA members in favor of the resolution, please raise your flag. Oh, poor boss.
You're out of line.
All those opposed, all those who abstain, by a vote of now 21-0, the motion passes. The resolution passes. So congratulations. All right. I'm sorry.
I'm very grateful you did it with this aspect of the big problem. I think that if you're not composting, it would be an issue just because the first is they just have to, I guess, keep a lid on it no longer the composting and keep building the container. But it's looked at a bunch of other things too. For example, you can have kind of meet a five of the problems.
Look at that collaboration. go for it.
Okay, I just wanted to say, like, for everyone's clarification, everything is, like, I was chilling out with all the track halls and everything on campus, so, like, all the utensils, the bins, everything you can use for compost, now they're all accessible. So, just to get that.
Good for you. Congratulations. That's the word. That's the word. All right. You're dismissed. We're going to go now into a pretty deep discussion. Be led by these people. I'm going to kind of give this to you.
No.
Is that deep? You were just, I didn't think it was
that.
No, it's not. We just got an email that we're doing exactly.
Oh, no. So I didn't even know that just went out. But anyway,
no,
we're about
to... I sent an email that I gave you.
Oh, sorry. Are you talking about FAR?
Yeah, for the clarification, the executive session is just for an internal election, and it shouldn't take more than a few minutes.
Yeah. And I don't think this, we might not even be here for all that long. So right now we're actually going to talk about something that is forthcoming, something that we are charged with addressing this semester, talking about addressing our endowment. So these people have to take it away.
Yes. So I just want to talk a little bit about the appropriations we will be tackling this semester. So over 10 years ago, the Appropriations Committee at that time hoped that we could eventually collect enough money to endow the student activity, or at least part of the student activity. So, for example, right now we spend $84.16 on that FJC every year. Would it be possible to get an endowment that students aren't paying that $84 for the student activity every year? But with the work of the past two DC finances, so Adam McLeay and Renil Desai, we started kind of looking into this endowment and realized it would be very unrealistic. The endowment wouldn't be large enough until about 20 million. And the way the endowment was growing was in the appendix B, it would require that $5 of the SASB's allocation would go into the endowment every year. So every student for the past 10 years is going to make $5 every year to this endowment. Right now, this counts at around $900,000. We're trying to figure out what to do with it. We don't have a lot of guidelines as far as what we can or cannot do with it. And we pretty much do whatever we want. And there has been a lot of discussion on what should we do with large sum of money. Because rarely, if ever again, will the assembly have the opportunity to use such a large sum of money. And there is a big debate over whether or not to do a CapEx project, so a single building, for example, maybe a deanship associate position, something like that, or whether to go toward something smaller. And one of the proposals that was brought up, which is something that's been investigated a lot, would be something like an innovation fund, an innovation commission, something like that. And I just kind of want to talk about one of the proposals. What I hope you guys get out of this is that we are not settled on what we're doing with some of the money. If you guys have ideas for what we should do with this amount of money, we definitely want to hear them. The appropriations and money to hear them. Because realistically right now, what we're talking about is what is best amongst the options that we have. But we're not that creative. If there are things that you think you can use this money for that would be the best, we definitely want to hear that. So one of the proposals right now is to create an innovation fund. And the point behind this would be to serve as a funding on campus that isn't currently met. So basically, if you're borrowing from an organization, you can spend your money on pretty much whatever you want, and you get a lot of it. However, if you're an SAC-funded organization, you slowly develop. So first semester, you're an SAC organization, you get $500, then $1,000, then $1,500, and you go up another year, $2,500, et cetera. And the sector on campus that's not currently being funded, I guess, would be either things that are not groups. So if you just have an idea for an event, say you wanted to throw a large tailgate for the Cornell Harbor Hockey Games, where would you get money for that? Or if you're an organization that has very high upfront costs. So for example, there's very recently a crowdfunded organization it's a Cornell radio, a sports radio group. Needed about $5,000 to get the equipment to be an organization to report on athletics on a daily basis. And so for them, they're not serviced by IRM, which is their brand new organization, and they're not going to be serviced
by SAP because the upfront capital expenditures are too high on SAP. And so that's something that we've been looking at. And if we constructed the, or if we created a company, so it's having similar to SAP, somewhat independent of the student assembly, but still overseen by the student assembly, we could give out annually about $25,000 per forever, basically. And so that's been one of the main ideas that the appropriators committee is seriously considering. Now, obviously, there are a number of questions with something like that. What makes it an eligible program? Who would we put on this commission? What sort of projects do we want to fund? Are there types of expenses they drove with those for these non-coordinated students that we want this fund to be able to use for? And these are all questions that we don't have the answers for yet. There are things that I'd certainly like us to discuss. So I guess I just kind of wanted to bring that idea to you, just kind of just thinking about that a little bit. I am very committed to doing something with the fund this year. And the reason why is that, quite frankly, Adam and Leo have spent an enormous amount of time. I know that they want to see something done with this. I received that email the other day from Vince Andrews, who's president of the SA, when I was a freshman, and he's seen, I guess, the idea for the Innovation Fund. He said he thought it'd be an interesting way to go, and he'd certainly be happy to finally have something done with the endowment. So I guess I just kind of want to open this up for any questions people have. If you have ideas for what we could do with the money, if you have questions about the Innovation Fund itself, I didn't present a specific plan to you guys because the appropriations pretty hard to work on. We're not even going to control the Innovation Fund. But I just kind of want to bring the idea up to this body, see if this is something that makes sense to you, kind of willing to take questions.
Great. There are the speakers. We'll try to keep it to questions a little. You can put in comments too, but try to keep them brief, so. Yep. But now you
can. Yeah, so we've been talking about this for 3 years, and I have a couple of points. Number one, the $5 that we see that everybody has been paying for the past 3 years is super crushed by the way.
It has been.
Okay. Secondly, with regard to the decisions that will be finally made, I'm a believer of democracy, and I think students that be decided like you say, but it should be like a campus-wide referendum on what nearly $1 million that has been spent by me in the past 4 years and the others before me is actually put to use. And thirdly, I think the idea of the Innovation Fund is interesting, but I think it would benefit only a part of the students, and especially, I'm afraid, after the issues I've seen with accounting issues, with organizations, and how experts spend our money, and there's a lot of issues with regards to that could be very dangerous. So I would rather personally and the people I've spoken to spend this money on capital expenditure, such as current renovation of the district hall or other buildings that are not in a good state, that would benefit the whole campus for the next year. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Matt? I have a kind of callback for the entire community.
Jeff, did you have
a comment? Just a couple of things. I think that he brought a very good point, which I wanted to emphasize. Just to say, we shouldn't consider this as student assembly money. This is student money that has been taken over a number of years and put into a large fund. And whatever decision we make this semester needs to be focused on doing it back to the students. I think it's very important. So I don't think this is the FA money at all. This is student money that's just sitting in the account right now. And just to remind you of this, I want to say that, really when we're thinking about this, our job is to figure out what is the best way that it impacts students in the biggest way possible and impacts as many students as possible. So that's just
Great. Gitlin. Thanks, sir.
You see, no matter how old the board of trustees members are, they're always talking for donations. One thing I would say, as far as CapEx projects go, is like, I think that when I first heard of this fund, I definitely liked the idea of a CapEx project, mainly because, like, when I was doing something on such a large sum of money, right? At the same time, I do think that the difficulty with the CapEx is that it's hard to determine what kind of project. So, why Wilshire Hall versus RPTC versus maybe getting, maybe having a place for like a student center. I mean, these are all projects that we could all do. And I think that that's one thing that's difficult about putting it into a single place. Just something to keep in mind is how do we go about determining what is a single place where all this money should go?
Sounds good. Next is Rep. Maletti.
So I actually had the same sentiment as the past two speakers, but taking it further, what I would say is that there's great inequality amongst professional boards, and as a fellow RFI resident, I think that it would be wise to put aside at least a small portion of that towards the professional living sphere, because I think those who live in usually communities have vastly different circumstances than those in high-rise, low-rise, and that area. So I'll just put that
out. Yes, interesting. We can talk about one. There's a budget model thing that goes into that, so it's a little different.
But I think that again, showing the problem of like the difficulty we'll have in looking at CapEx projects is like, should we renovate the high rise or should we build a hall? You know, and I think that one thing that I've seen is probably that the innovation fund is kind of the reason why, you know, especially when we don't like that idea of the innovation fund, is if a student team goes and says, I'd like to see, say, $6,000 in the renovation in the bathrooms of the high rise, that might be something that you can actually fund through the fund.
Okay. Don't worry, we have a lot of people in the
classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
those
are
just
I'm going to answer your point of information, and this will be one of the few times I inject my opinion in anything. Personally, I am a big fan of renovating Willow Street Hall. That was my sentiment from the beginning when we first discussed it last year. We actually inadvertently moved on to the resolution that was put forward because it was pretty much drafted by the time this topic had been brought to us as an executive board, which is why it was there. So just to clarify that, but there is a different budget model that goes in for facilities, and Rob could probably talk to you a bit more about that, but that's actually collected from the colleges. So it's a new thing, but so it's a little different, which is why I'm saying it might not work for the dorm thing. The other part of this is before we actually make a final decision on anything, we actually have to vote on the resolution that currently stands. Which is not before you right now, but last year the Assembly passed a resolution that was for the Innovation Fund, and it stipulated that it had to be reviewed. Technically, it was supposed to be reviewed in the fall, but we were a little occupied in the fall. But it has to go through this sitting Assembly for approval or disapproval. You can overturn it, especially if you all have different ideas, or is there something that you want to work on, or you want to table it indefinitely. Either way, it still has to come before this Assembly to be decided. So that's the way we're going to do it. So that's that discussion on that. So there are a lot of people left on the speakers list. We want to end on time because there is another event in here, and we still have to do this internal election. So there are 3 minutes left, and I'm going to, unless you guys have, this is going to be an ongoing discussion that I would really, really encourage you to talk with Jeff. So I'm actually going to adjourn this meeting right now so we can do this internal election real quick and still get out of here in time for Renee's event.
One thing I have to say, I think that this is a topic that's been debated for a long time. There's a lot behind it. So I definitely prefer to talk with you guys, sit down with you and talk with you guys offline. I don't think that this is always the most convenient way to get information across. If you guys have ideas, you guys can sit down and talk. Just send me an email.
Great.
Sounds good. So, unless there are any objections, I have a motion to adjourn the meeting. Been seconded. The meeting is adjourned at 6:28.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.